I want to convince people that they have more influence than they realize, and to use it for good and to not squander it. So I think the fastest way to lose influence is to not be aware of influence. So like, just to convince you, like, hey, you're a leader. You got something to say. You got people that are watching your life. And so let's make it count.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives, ultimately answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? I am super excited you're joining us for this conversation because I think you're going to learn a lot from today's guest. You may have already heard of today's guest, and if you have, then I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. And if you haven't, then I want to introduce you to somebody who talks a lot about leadership, a lot about being a servant leader, and also is a pastor and a friend to many in the Los Angeles area. The pastor of Zoe Church, Chad Veach, joins us today. If you haven't been to Zoe and you're in Los Angeles, I highly recommend visiting to experience what Chad and his team are creating. They have a way of making a big, busy, and sometimes chaotic city feel warm and welcoming. How do they do it? I think today's conversation will reveal some of the ways they have intentionally built such a unique space and community. This conversation is for all of you who inspire and are aspired to be a leader in your life, which Chad argues can be every single one of us if we choose. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get into it. On today's episode of Hope Still Wins, here's my conversation with Chad Veach. Chad, thank you so much for joining Hope Still Wins.
Let's go. Thank you for having me.
Chad, it's a pleasure to have you. I was just mentioning to you, but we'll say it again for anybody listening. We've met before at iHeart Studios. Very special shout out to Tanya, who brought you in to be on the show, and we got to meet then.
She's amazing. She's the best. iHeartRadio.
That's right. She is a special human who shares a bright light. But you do also, and that's why you're here. You've been doing it for a while. I got to, during my little stint in Los Angeles, your name continued to get brought up. You've really made an impact around that area. And I want to start by allowing you a few minutes here to kind of tell people who you are. And then also, if you don't mind, within that, speaking about why LA and then how you've kind of continued to be a part of LA, since your start as a pastor.
Yeah. Well, I'm a pastor's kid. I'm from Seattle, Washington. Go Sonics. Go Seahawks. I grew up, in the Northwest. And right when I graduated high school in 1998, I moved to LA for the first time. And I did 6 years on the east side of the city. I was living in San Dimas, and I actually worked at a church for 5.5 years in East LA, like in kind of the hood. And then I went back to Seattle for 10 years, got married, had a couple kids. And then I really felt like I was supposed to come back to LA and start a church. So I moved back down in 2014, I want to say, and started a church in our living room. So when I left LA the first time, I was so mad. Like, I was legit angry. I was like, I do not want to leave LA. Why am I going back to the rain? Why am I going back? Like, yeah. our Sonics have been taken away. Why am I going back? At that time, we didn't even have Marshawn Lynch or anything. So I was like, why am I going back? So I always loved LA, and I always wanted to just live the rest of my life here.
You know, it's interesting because I, went to LA, spent some time in LA, And I'm from Indiana originally. And one of the most common questions that I would get asked is, how can you be in LA? It's so dark. That was kind of how it would be explained. How would you explain Los Angeles? And then also, how would you explain your job in Los Angeles? For anybody listening that's maybe from the Midwest that sees LA as this just like this pit of terribleness, how would you explain it?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like I get so defensive, right? Like I get really like, it's like someone talking trash about my child.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy to me like that. It's all media, right? It's all the narrative that the media spins that this is like a dark city that's going to hell. And, you know, all these like, I don't know, monster rules and monster politicians and monster celebrities. LA, if you spend time around Angelenos, like people that are from here, or even a lot of transplants that just embrace this city and its culture, we have the best food, we have the best coffee, we have the best weather, my God, the best weather. And we have amazing people, like truly, genuinely, we have incredible people in our city. And like any city that has millions and millions of people, there's going to be some knuckleheads, but the people that are like kind and gracious and awesome, like Tanya and yourself, they far outweigh, you know, any knucklehead. So I love LA. I love it with a passion. When I go to Dodger Stadium or I go to Staples Center, because I refuse to call it Crypto Arena. When I go to, you know, the Coliseum, it's like you're walking shoulder to shoulder with like just the greatest people. So I'm in love with our city.
Super interesting people too. People from all different backgrounds and incredible stories, and a lot of grit. You know, LA doesn't get the grit they deserve because New York, you know, you think of New York, you know, it's a gritty city. It's tough. People have to grind to be there. And I was like, LA has the same thing. Like people move there without a dime trying to make it as an actor or an actress. And they have to do whatever they can to get there.
One of my best friends actually moved out here. Ironically, the timing of this, he moved out here with Will Smith when he landed Fresh Prince from Philadelphia. And he, you know, he's done everything with Will, like every song, every movie, every, you know, he's kind of like his right hand. And he comes to our church. He's a really good friend of mine. He was saying, I asked him one time, like, why do you work so hard? Like, you guys have sold millions and millions of records. Like, you've dominated the box office. Like, why do you work so hard? And he's, you know, he's older than me. And he's like, dude, the thought in the back of my mind is always like, if I don't work hard here, I got to go back home. Mm. And I'm not going back to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I just think you're right. Like people out here, there is beautiful art in like so many incredible, like you think about Silicon Beach on the west side of Playa Vista. You look at so many people in different industries and fields that are crushing it. But the grind and the work ethic is admirable out here.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, you've done a lot of that in your teaching. And yes, you're a pastor of Zoe Church in Los Angeles, but you also do many other things even outside of that. One of the things that you focus on, which I thought would be really fun to talk about today, is leadership. Leadership is something very important to you. And so the first question I have, because I've gone to and been able to be a part of many leadership conferences within the Christian space and over the last few years. Why is leadership such an important topic within the Christian tradition, but also why is it important to you for people who maybe don't even believe anything similar to what you believe?
Well, to me, my passion for leadership was passed down from my father. My dad's like, was always reading leadership books, always listening to leadership teachings, always going to like the Global Leadership Summit. And so I'm just a recipient of his influence. And that got into me like a love for leadership and just to marvel where there's great leadership. And you, because everything rises and falls on leadership, just bottom line. And the greatest felt need in the world is leadership, which leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And we need great leaders in our homes. We need great leaders in our businesses, in our communities. We need great leadership in our country. We need great leadership in Russia, in Ukraine, in China, South Korea, North Korea. Like, we just need leadership everywhere. So, you know, wherever people are prospering and doing well, where there's unity or vision, I always think that's just a reflection of great leadership. Wherever there's toxicity, and there's backbiting or there's, you know, like just chaos, it's just a leadership issue. So I just marvel. And I think my big passion is to convince everyone, like, you're a leader. Like, you started this podcast off IGTV, turned it into a podcast, and you're now impacting and influencing countless numbers of people. That's just leadership. So I just, I come from the premise that I want to convince people that they have more influence than they realize, and to use it for good, and to not squander it. So I think the fastest way to lose influence is to not be aware of influence. So like, just to convince you, like, hey, you're a leader. You got something to say. You got people that are watching your life. And so let's make it count.
Why is that so important to you as a pastor then? You said your dad was a pastor, you're a pastor's kid. He listened to leadership teachings. He spoke on leadership. He cared about leadership. It's been passed down to you. Why do you feel like that is something that exists? I mean, the Global Leadership Summit, something you mentioned, right? It's mostly a Christian leadership summit. Now there's people from other places in the world and other traditions that come into it, but it's mostly a Christian leadership summit. Why is it such a topic within the Christian faith?
Well, I think it's such a topic within the Christian faith because I think people are convinced that the greatest leader that ever walked the face of the earth, in our opinion, is Jesus. And the reason why he was so great is because he was a servant leader. And to me, the best form of leadership is servant leadership. When you live to serve, you live to give, you live to help, you live to add value. So I think the reason why the faith cul-de-sac embraces leadership is because we look and we go, wow, this revolution, this new world order, this new kingdom was established by a leader that washed feet. This leadership, think about this, like he says things like, the first shall be last. Hey, if you go to a dinner, do not sit at the head of the table. Sit at the very end. And if they call for you, that's great. So the spirit of that, to us, is going like, that's leadership. Leadership is going, I'm secure, I'm confident, I don't live to take, I live to give. It's not about me, it's about empowerment. So you can't follow the life of Jesus without marveling at his leadership principles. And I think my passion comes from going like, how do I convince the single mom at home that you're doing a great job leading your two kids? Or how do you convince like that entrepreneur? That we just had a guy in our church. He had six employees when he went into COVID. He's now at 51. But he's just been studying leadership and leaning into leadership. So he believed that there was 50 in him when there was only like five or six. So I just think just trying to encourage and inspire people to be the best version of themselves.
Let's dig into that a little bit, basing this off of how Jesus lived his life and his service leadership. How does that play out in our world? What does that look like? You just mentioned the single mother. You just mentioned the entrepreneur. But as we look into that, a lot of people hear that and hear, you know, Jesus washing the feet of others, and he wouldn't sit at the head of the table. And in our world, it feels like, hey, you've got to take opportunities that exist. You've got to sit at the head of the table. I've got to get my own before anybody else gets theirs. I got to get ahead of the race. So how do we switch that narrative, or does that narrative need to be switched? What does that look like kind of in this really fast-paced world we're living in?
Yeah, and I think that that's the tension that we all live in. Like, all of life is lived within a tension, right? It's like, when do I need to, like, step in and insert myself and, you know, find an opportunity to go meet this person or, you know, whatever the example you want to use for yourself. But I think at the end of the day, like, it's all motives. It's all intention. It's all wrestling art. You know, one of my favorite Peloton instructor always says, no ego, amigo. It's like, you can still be confident, step into a room like Art Fantania, iHeartRadio, Ryan Seacrest, like this girl's confident, stepping into big rooms. But I don't think it's like, it's ever going like, I'm less than, I shouldn't be known or seen, or I don't think that. I think it's just going like, I know why I exist. I know my purpose. And my purpose is not to be self-serving, to leverage or to monetize my relationship. I'm actually called to serve people, love people, help people. And if that is the focus of my life, I cannot lose. But if I see people as like a stepping stone, if I see relationship as a means to an end, then I'm going to run through relationships and run through people. And at the end, I could get there because all of us are talented and smart enough to use that stuff to get there. But when you get there, like, what do you have to show for it? And what kind of name are you left with? I think that's the stuff that becoming a servant leader or being aware of leadership helps you recognize so you don't use people.
Hey everybody, it's Ben here. I just wanted to tell you about Generous. Generous Coffee Company is a company my buddies and I started a few years ago with one simple purpose, to provide the highest quality coffee. So when you hear people talking about, oh my gosh, that's the best coffee I've ever had, well, Generous would fall into that category, specialty grade coffee. And then 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. We also have apparel and coffee mugs. But our coffee is really what drives us. So today, go visit us on Instagram at generous_coffee, or please, please go visit our website, generouscoffee.com. You can buy some coffee for yourself, for your business, for your school, for your church, for your family. It's a great gift, and we love to provide it to you. So please, go out there today, buy some coffee. We look forward to having you as our guest and our client. It would be such a cool partnership, and I would love to hear what you think. So please review us online. Again, that's generouscoffee.com. 100% of the profits are donated to nonprofits. Not to switch gears completely, but we've just talked about kind of the foundation of leadership and the intention behind it. Then I would love, because I think so many people out there are trying to find their voice within this and trying to find their place within being a leader. Where do they fit in? What do they go after? You know, one of the questions that we get asked on the podcast all the time is, how do I find my passion? Which is such a complex question, because I think there's so much more behind that question than just the answer that could be given. If somebody asks you, how do I find my voice within all this? What would you say?
I think a lot of times, like, our vision usually comes from our frustration. Things that bother us, things that, you know, it's like for me, right? A lot of my vision goes like, man, there's a lot of people that don't know hope and don't know God. And I feel like are like lost. And so out of that negative current reality, I have a vision to go reach and serve. So I think I would ask the question, like, what bothers you? What, where do you see a need? Where do you look in culture or humanity and go like, I hate that people don't have clean water, or I hate that there's young people that don't know, they don't have a father and they don't have identity and don't know who they are. So I think it's just about trying to find like opportunities to go fill a void.
I mean, you work with a lot of very successful people, and success, not just financially, but in terms of what spaces and lanes they're running in. You yourself have a platform and an influence that has expanded and grown. I think one of the hardest things, knowing people who have tried to step out and find their voice and follow their passions, are the critics then. And so you, as I just mentioned, have worked with a lot of people who are doing incredible things in this world. And they have a lot of critics and a lot of supporters. What do you say to them? And then what do you say to yourself, Chad, when it comes to the critics and the voices that are chirping and yelling and telling you, you can't do it? Or maybe the most hurtful thing is, you can do this, but you aren't the right person for it.
Or you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong.
Or that, you know, someone that would question your motives.
Yeah.
I just always think like, listen, like, criticism is a sign of doing things right. That's the way that I see it. Like, whenever you start getting criticized, that should be a sign for you, like, I'm doing something right. When there's another side of the coin that goes, I hate this. I hate the message. I hate you. I just like that to me is going like, great. There's another side of that coin that's going, I love this. I love the way you deliver it. I love who you are. So it's like, until there is criticism, I don't think that there's like the other side, you know? So it's like, and by the way, you know, just for me personally, as a Jesus follower, Jesus is like, guys, they hate me. Mm-hmm. They're going to hate you. So that just puts me at rest of going like, if they hated the guy that was perfect, they're definitely going to hate the guy that's imperfect. You know? So I just think like, but it's cliche, but it's that old saying, like, if I live by people's praises, I'll die by their criticism. Like I'll just live, you know, by the coin flip. And you can't live by praise and you can't live by criticism. You have to live by purpose, by values, by mission. You have to, you know, really go by what is in your heart. And if people's opinions of you, like I heard Reese Witherspoon say the other day, and she was quoting somebody else, people's opinions about you are none of your business. And I was like, yeah, there you go right there. Like, it's great to do an interview with you. And like, but like, could you imagine if I let your opinion of me slow down my passion or my purpose in my life? That means there's something internally wrong with me.
Well, I mean, one of the groups of people that are getting the most criticism today is the young generation. The way they're coming up, it feels like it's very fast paced, right? Technology has increased our ability to connect. They're outspoken. They're passionate. How are they? What are you learning personally from this younger generation? What are you seeing in them that maybe surprises you or excites you? That you're encouraged by the young people coming up through your church and through the community around you?
Well, I'm just blown away at their creativity. I'm actually pretty blown away at their work ethic. I feel like they've got a strong work ethic. I know we're living in the mass, you know, exodus. I think another 4 million people quit their jobs in February in America. So I do recognize that we're seeing that, you know, in a wild rate. But I think we're seeing that because I think you're seeing a lot of young people bet on themselves, you know, to do things freelance, to go like, I'm going to roll the dice on me and try and find a better job, try and make more money, try and create a better. I just don't know if people in my generation were thinking the way that this generation is thinking, as where before prior generations just power through it out of college, find some 9 to 5, blah, 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 blah. You see this young generation, it's like, I'm going to have a Robinhood app and I'm going to invest in the stocks. I'm going to make crypto happen. I'm going to get an NFT. I'm going to find a way to make, you know, different streams of income work for my life. Like, I just think the creativity and the entrepreneurship of this generation is like nothing we've ever seen.
How do we grasp onto it then, right? Because there's incredible leaders in the older generations that we'll speak about and speak to in a second. But how do these two different leadership styles and two different ways of functioning in this world, or multiple different ways, there's not just two, multiple different ways, kind of come together and align and work together?
Well, I think that the older generation, you know, just speaking from someone that leads an organization, I've had to really lean in and listen and study and try and adapt. And I just think that's all of life, right? All of life is living as a learner. And I think of the older generation, what we could sabotage is partnership. And what we could lose is influence. If we just write off the younger generation, like, they don't get it. They don't work as hard. I don't know if it's as simple as that. I just think that they're thinking in such a different paradigm than we ever have, that we have to really slow down and assess the good. And if there's opportunity to shed light on the bad, the potential negative side of their thinking patterns. So yeah, we're dealing with it constantly with the young leaders that we're hiring and the young people that we have around us, of just trying to understand, oh yeah, this whole game changed. And if we don't adapt to that, we won't have people working for us or with us.
It's so interesting. You brought up the Global Leadership Summit earlier, and I've been a few times, and I typically at those conferences remember a lot for about a day and then forget everything I heard. But one thing that stuck out to me that has stuck with me now, it's been 6 years, is Craig Rochelle had said, what would it look like in your life, or what are you scared of to be able to learn from everyone. And that stuck with me, is just the idea in my own life is to humble myself with the idea that even if I disagree, even if I can't see it their way, what does it look like for me to be, to have the desire to learn? You just spoke on it. And I do think it's something really, it seems simple, but it's really exciting to listen, to stay curious, no matter where you're at in life, and to learn.
Huge.
Because everybody has something to teach us.
And we all have something to learn. I mean, just think about this. Like, why do we listen to podcasts? You know, if you're listening to this podcast right now, why would you listen to this podcast? It's because you want to learn something, you know? And I think that's why it's like, we live this life of, if you're a leader, you're trying to like, give me the book I got to read. Give me the podcast I got to listen to. Give me the documentary I got to watch, because I am so aware of how little I know.
Just a final few questions here. One that's kind of random. But what are you seeing as the leader? And there's multiple leaders in your church. But what are you seeing right now within your church? Kind of back to the last question. What are you excited about? What are you encouraged by? What are you frustrated with? For people listening that are, you know, trying to figure out what the state of the church is, what are you seeing at Zoe?
Well, I'm really excited about, you know, this huge potential of how many people we can reach digitally. And you know, I felt like forever, you know, the church kind of looked at their online expression as just like, we're going to throw out the bat signal at multiple camera shots and people are blessed to watch us, aren't they? And I think now it's like, because we had to make this an actual location, now it's taking that bat signal and going, no, this is a community. How do you turn a digital crowd into a church? So I get excited about that potential of going like, hey, we got people that attend faithfully every Sunday from Rhode Island and Indiana and Florida and Mississippi and Seattle. And how do we get these people together on Zoom for a Bible study? How do we get them how do we convince them that they're just as important as the people that show up in person? And how do we not shame people that don't show up in person and let them know? You know, it's like, hey, the fact that you're with us and tuning in is just as important as the people in the room. So I get excited about the potential there, not of viewership, but of engagement. Because I think that's the real test. It's not how many eyeballs are watching you. How engaged are those eyeballs? So that's a real challenge to try and get engagement. And so we're trying to learn that. But I get excited. I get excited just about, you know, just the reinvention of ecclesia, which is the gathering. So I can gather in person, I can gather online, but no matter what, it's like, it's community. And how do we all, this is our total mission. How do we all follow this one perfect guy named Jesus? From wherever you're tuning in. So it's a challenge, and it's what we're up for.
Well, it's super exciting and it is happening. And again, if it almost feels like if you're not going to at least stay curious about the idea of connecting digitally,
right,
you're going to get left. And we don't want that for anybody. That's not a hope. It's not a desire.
No. And to me, like and I understand it because it is generational. You hear from an older guard, like, unless they're in the room or people aren't coming. You know, some guys are like, we're cutting off the feed because if we don't, they're not going to come back. And I just go, I don't know. I think that, could you imagine if Amazon were to treat their consumer base that way?
Yeah.
You know, it's like everything's changing, including church. You have to catch up with the signs of the times. Like just, I love to try and study behavior and learn behavior patterns. The user's behavior, or in our world, the attender's behavior has changed. Okay, let's meet them where they're at. Because what's our job? To encourage, to equip, to inspire. It's like, I'm going to be mad at their attendance? No, I want to meet them right where they're at.
Well, final question for you, kind of wrapping all of this into one then. From the research we were doing, I believe there is a thing at your church. It's a leadership college. Can you tell us about it? I don't know now if, kind of based on what we were just talking about, if people from outside of LA can join into this and join on to it. But will you tell anybody about it that might be interested?
Yeah. And thank you. You know, we got people, I think right now we're at 11 or 12 students, which COVID really slowed down our attendance. I think we were at 47 students before COVID. So with everything being shut down, it took a little while for it to get, you know, going again. We got kids from Vegas. We got one kid from Augusta, Georgia. I think that's pretty cool. You know, we got kids from all over the place and a whole bunch coming for summer interns. Yeah, just to me, leadership is like, it's through osmosis. It's like you have to be in proximity. You know, I always, again, Jesus is our reference point. So he takes these 12 guys, tax collectors, fishermen, these ragamuffin dudes. He throws them in his back pocket for 3 years. And they just go with him. And they see him walk on water and all of it. They see all of it. And then after 3 years, he goes, all right, go change the world. And they do. But without those 3 years in the back pocket, I just don't know if there's a hope. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's like leadership, or in our world, ministry is like, it's caught, you're around it, and it's taught. It's both. It's like you're around it, so you see, I can repeat behavior that's modeled. But then it's also like somebody looking at me in the eyes and be like, hey, don't ever do that again. Mm-hmm. Brush your teeth before you come in and use a little deodorant, okay? Like you need both. So I just think that, you know, the college is there to serve young people that are interested in that.
How do they find it?
It's called zoeleadershipcollege.org. And you can sign up. It's you can come for a semester, or you can come for, you know, the full year for 9 months.
That's awesome, man. That's great. Well, thank you for sharing all this, and thank you for the work that you're doing. I know, you know, I always like to try to share this, but when I was in Los Angeles for a period of time, didn't have a lot of connection and community, and people continued to tell me about your church and about your community, about what you're up to, and invited me to little Bible studies and little studies and hangout groups, and there, you can definitely feel the pull of Zoe when you're in LA, that the people are talking about it, and they're proud of it. They're proud to be a part of this community, which is really, exciting also. So great work, building and helping build that alongside, I know, probably a really incredible team.
Thank you. Yeah. It's all team. It's all true.
Yeah.
But thank you. And that really means a lot.
Well, Chad Veach is also the author of Help, I Work With People: Getting Good at Influence, Leadership and People Skills, Unreasonable Hope: Finding Faith in the God Who Brings Purpose to Your Pain, Faith Forward Future: Moving Past Your Disappointments, Delays and Destructive Thinking. Now, final question for you here. We ask everybody the same question. You answer it however you would like to answer it. We have multiple different answers, and none of them are shamed or judged, or it's a complete, I guess what I'm saying is, it's a completely guilt-free answer that you have.
I love it.
Chad, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I can't write a book called Unreasonable Hope and not think that hope wins. You know, that would kind of contradict that whole message. Hope wins, man. Hope. There's a quote in the book. It's like, I'm going to mess it up, but it's like, you can go like 4 to 5 days without food, or like, I forget how many, you know, days without water, and it goes like seconds without air. This whole list of, like, you know, different things that we need as humans. But the end of it, the punchline is like, but you can only go a few seconds without hope. And the whole point of that is going like, if you lose hope, you lose everything. You know, hope is, I always think, hope is the architect of our life, and our faith is the builder. So hope like draws the plans up, and then it's our everyday application, you know, the faith to do it, to start the podcast, start the business, our faith to keep showing up and record. That's what builds the life. But hope is that dream. Hope is that vision. hope is that, yeah, I do see change. I do see possibility. Hope still wins, because without hope, we should just like, let's wrap up shop and go home, you know? So I think hope clearly to me comes from God. You know, he is the God of faith, hope, and love. So yeah, hope wins. And I hope for everyone that's listening, tuning in, listening, you know, continually to this podcast, that you get a little bit more hope out of every single guest that's on.
I hope so too. Well, Chad, thanks for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify, and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. Well, that's it for today, my friends. Just a reminder to check out Zoe Church online if you're in Los Angeles, or just visit in person. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and let's talk next week.